You're listening to Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. The people who inhabit Minnesota writer Brad Zeller's novel House of Coats are all around us, but most of us rarely notice them.
They're the men, almost always men, who faded away from family and community and have retreated to the fringes of society. In Zeller's novel, the hero, Lester B. Morrison, often lives in his car and sometimes in sketchy rooming houses in southern Minnesota. Things start to change for Morrison when he meets a woman who sees an opportunity to bring him into the fold.
Zeller worked on the book with photographer Alex Soth, and the book features pictures of Morrison's often bleak world on the margins. Zeller himself is in Madison through the fall as part of a UW Arts Institute interdisciplinary arts residency, and he joins us by phone. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
The description that you write of your hero, Lester B. Morrison, that I think in my eyes sums him up best is when you write that he lacks the collaborative gene. Can you paint a picture of where Lester is in this world?
I mean, I think he's a guy who's between spaces and sort of one of those characters who's drifting around trying to find his place. There's a line in there that there's a small difference between the word apart and a part. And I think there's a lot of people that struggle with that distinction. In this day and age, with all the social media and online networking, it's real easy to feel like, you know, this sort of ersatz sense of connection. And then there's other people before the days of the internet where you didn't even have that. So, like, you basically, there were these characters that I've always kind of been drawn to that drift at the margins. And I think that's where he is. And Lester is one of those guys who drifts at the margins and sort of creeps further and further into the periphery as the years go by. But never, you know, they never stop lacking that sort of fierce longing for some sense of connection.
Well, and as this came together, how much did you feel you owed this story to Lester Morrison himself? And how much is the idea that there are Lester Morrisons all around us who also have stories of how they got there?
I mean, I think he's very much kind of a Trojan horse to get those ideas, that idea out there. I mean, I've always said that, I mean, since I was a young kid, even in a small town, I was always aware of the people that just moved along with their heads down and their eyes down and didn't make eye contact. And the guys, the solitary men that would sit alone in a newspaper and magazine room at my local public library, and every day they'd just be there alone, not engaging with anyone. And I've always been curious about those sorts of people. You know, there's also something about, in my own personality, that wrestles with those two worlds, you know, the need for solitude and the desire to be a part of a community. And I think that wrestling match goes on all the time for everybody in different degrees.
Of course, the tricky nature is, you know, that this is a group of people who, you know, for whatever reason, either chooses to be alone or simply is alone. And it can't be easy to get to know them and really get to understand them. How do you set about not just noticing them, but kind of making sense of them?
I mean, I think some of it just comes from, you know, kind of, like I say, a natural affinity. I have my own inclinations to this retreat. You know, I've spent a lot of my adult life traveling alone, and I've spent a big chunk of time alone in the woods in Vermont. I mean, many, many, many months without, you know, not only human contact, but basic amenities that most people take for granted. And I think there's this perspective thing that sort of gives you a radar for those people and also a curiosity about who they are. And I do think everybody's got a different story and a different reason for being where they are, why they are the way they are. So I'm just always really fascinated with trying to engage those people when I encounter them and, you know, try to get a sense of what each individual's story is and how they ended up where they are, and also where they would like to be.
Well, and that's kind of also, you know, really in the sweet spot, if you will, of what the photographer Alex Soth works on. And I would imagine that is why this is such a strong project for both of you.
Well, I mean, we you know, it is. Again, it's one of those things where kind of kindred spirits. The whole point of this book and that line about, you know, some people don't get the collaborative gene, and it's like I think naturally myself for the first 40-some years of my life, collaboration was something that was difficult. I preferred to work on things alone and figure things out on my own. And I think that's the arc of Alex's career as well. He'd done a lot of long-term solitary projects including one that was devoted to solitary men and hermits and people who were in retreat, and he sought them out all over the country for his project, Broken Manual. You know, the irony of that was here was this guy alone in his van traveling all over the country to these very remote places looking for men who were living alone. And there was a connection that resulted in work. And at the same time, I think coming out of that project, he felt like this real hunger to actually be connected and to have a real collaboration. And I was in the same state in my life. And we clicked. I mean, we've worked on many projects together now. And, you know, it's a collaboration that works.
The thing that grabbed me first, you know, about the book was, you know, I have driven past the House of Coates any number of times on that stretch of U.S. 52 south of the Twin Cities, and, you know, sort of wondered about its existence. But the you know, there are any number of stretches of road like that anywhere in southern Wisconsin, you know, probably in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. But the thing that adds to it is just the sight of this kind of Blade Runner style refinery. What do you think the refinery is to Lester and to this book in general?
Well, I mean, you know, the thing is there is this, you know, notion of the pathetic fallacy, which is, and it is this sense that when you have this certain emotional state, that you will look for that, and you will look for an environment that mirrors that. And there's just some weird miserable comfort, and like, you know, I mean, you know, if misery loves company, then the ultimate is to find a place that is so desolate, a landscape that it, you know, basically shadows your own. And I think that, you know, a lot of the people you encounter out there along that stretch of the road really do seem to lead to just have that delight beat out of them. There's just it's very hard to have conversations. You can go into that truck stop that's across the road from the refinery, the Travel Plaza, which figures in the book. And, you know, you'll just see these, and they're almost all men sitting around alone at a table, you know, just lost in their thoughts. Well, across the road, there's this roaring, incredibly depressing spectacle, particularly in the middle of Minnesota winter with flames belching into the sky and big billowing smokestacks with steam. And it is really a foul and pathetic spectacle. You know, it's impossible to go out there, and it would be the ultimate Zen challenge to go out there and find some sense of peace.
And then on top of all this, there's the sign on the highway that says "Towards Zero Death" in that sort of cryptic way.
Yeah, and that sign is there, and it's like God knows what it means. You know, as you're driving south towards the refinery, there's this sign that says "Towards Zero Death Corridor," and you know, it's one of those state road signs that probably has some meaning of, you know, it's the Department of Transportation traffic study or something, but it feels like this, you know, almost like the sign in the Inferno, Dante's Inferno, that, you know, abandon hope all ye who enter here. Like, what does it mean and why is it right there? You know, it's basically, it's just one of the great, there's many, many mysteries out there.
Well, and you've got the sign that says this, and meanwhile, all around are men who are probably dying a million little deaths all the time.
Exactly. You know, I can't imagine that. I mean, one thing you'll notice if you go out there and you spend time is, you know, any place where there's actually any sense of, however tenuous, a permanent settlement, you'll see a lot of people with oxygen tanks. I can't imagine that the life expectancy in that little stretch of road is terribly long for anybody who lingers. I mean, the quality of life and air alone is pretty specious.
At the risk of shifting gears completely, what is your work at UW Madison this semester about? How are you connecting with people, you know, at the level that you're working at there?
Well, I mean, Alec and I are doing this residency, visiting artist residency for the fall semester, and it's a multidisciplinary program sponsored by a number of departments at the university. They have this interdisciplinary arts residency, and, you know, we're just super lucky to have been asked to come and do it. He and I, the House of Coates, is just kind of one component of a lot of the things we've done. Our collaboration over the years has been all about trying to find ways to combine photos with narrative to tell stories. So whether it's documentary work, which is the work we've been doing the last few years, we've been traveling around the country producing these little newspapers based on culture and community in various states around the country. And it's very straight up, well, not so much straight up perhaps, but it's documentary work. We actually drive all over states. We talk to all sorts of people. We create portraits in their own words, portraits of communities, often portraits of communities in peril, but we've also found so many places off the beaten track that are thriving small towns that a lot that we probably wouldn't have thought existed. We've done very arty projects together. We've done the House of Coats. Stuff we do and stuff Alec does with his Little Brown Mushroom Press is all about trying to find ways to tell stories, combining words and text. And so the class we're teaching and the work we're doing here is all about exploring all the possible ways to do that, whether it's through fiction or poetry or personal histories, memoir, or documentary work in the communities you live in. But it's all about just preserving stories. You know, my impetus is I had this experience when I was living in Paris in the late 80s. I met this African musician who said this thing to me once about the old people in the community, that it was important to talk to them all, and everybody you see walking down the street is alive or on fire, and when they're gone, their stories are gone. And that really struck me as something like kind of a mantra for the way I wanted to work. You know, there's so much about my own family history that I don't know that's gone. And I just really feel like, you know, all of us live in places that are in a permanent state of transition these days and gentrification. And when those old stories are gone and those people are gone, you know, if we don't get those stories down, they disappear. So, I mean, it's all just one way or another, whether it's your personal story or the story of your family or your community or somebody you meet on the street that strikes you as potentially having a tale to tell. It's just all about, you know, some form of honoring or preserving the stories that are all around us all the time. And, you know, pulling the books out of the burning library. That's what we do. That's what we're trying to do here, is working with the students in our class to produce work that tells stories visually and with some sense of narrative. And, you know, we've been bringing in a lot of guest artists, really incredible group of people that we've, you know, it's been a huge privilege. They've given us the resources to bring in some real, sort of a real dream team of visitors. And they get to share their experiences with the students in the community. And we've deliberately tried to find people that do radically different work, from, you know, war zone photographers and documentary photographers to people who are working, you know, in a more strictly artistic, fine arts vein. But all of them are wrestling with the same thing that Alec and I are, which is, how can you tell stories with images and text? And it is, you know, these days when everybody has a camera that they carry around with them all the time, and resources for recording and documenting things, it's so much easier now to do that and to be really vigilant about, like, finding and recording and documenting the stuff that you're walking through every day.
Do you feel like we're running the risk, if we don't do this, of basically, you know, turning into the human equivalent of strip malls? I mean, I don't know.
Oh, heck yeah. I mean, part of the project that Alec and I are doing the last few years, which is driving around the country, is, I mean, we deliberately avoid the interstates. And when you get off of those interstates where everything is replicated exactly the same every 30 miles, the same constellation of restaurants and stores and big box things, every place starts to look the same. It's very easy to become cynical and think America's just been strip malled. If you get off it and you get onto the state highways all over the country in every state, you will find self-contained little communities with health main streets that are dealing with real world problems like immigration and water. But yet they are far enough off of the freeway map that they don't have all of those big international stores and restaurants. And so they do have their still fine drive-in restaurants and local department stores and Ben Franklin's and things like that, and diners. And I do think that world is worth preserving. I think that's very much, much more connected to the history of communities and the country than these giant replicant places that you see everywhere you go. I mean, in terms of being in danger, I think it's just, there's two things. There's danger of that sort of stuff, just having, you know, becoming one giant edge city of the same stuff over and over and over. And we're also in danger of just becoming more and more insular. You know, it's really easy, you know, the culture of selfies and documenting your whole life online and sitting in front of a screen all day is like, it, you know, trying to tell these stories, other people's stories, getting outside of your head and going out into the community, it takes you out of yourself. And I think that's a big part of the work for both of us, is it forces us to engage with the world in a time when it's real easy to just constantly be in retreat and staring at your phone or your computer screen. And there's something very different about the experience of actually going out, talking to people, taking their pictures, and engaging with them.
Well, amen to that. Brad Zeller, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mitch. I really appreciate it.
Brad Zeller is the author of the novel House of Coats, published by Coffee House Press. Zeller is from Minnesota, but is in Madison through the fall for a UW Arts Institute Interdisciplinary Arts Residency. He'll give a lunchtime talk there tomorrow, and you can find a list of events at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. That's all for the Tuesday edition of Lake Effect. Tomorrow on the show, the next part of our week-long series on becoming a professional ballet dancer. But also, we'll have a recap of President Obama's visit to Milwaukee with NPR White House correspondent Tamara Keith.
Join us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for Lake Effect from listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Fresh air comes your way next. Stay tuned. It's 11 o'clock.